What's happening, y'all? This is Todd Wilson with another episode of Elevate Your Game. Today we have husband, father, high school All-American, Division I college player, pro, played everywhere from the NBA to overseas, over seven different countries. Now a trainer, developer, mentor, business owner. I did my research, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Adam Harrington, man, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the introduction. Definitely been blessed along this journey. The game of basketball since I was a young age is taking me to literally this spot in the studio right now. So thanks for having me. I'm excited to dive into some stuff and talk life, hoops, and yeah. I'm glad you said husband first, because you can argue always. That's the most important thing.
Oh, it is.
And it trickles down to our parenting, to our kids, and to business and everything. So yeah.
No, absolutely, man. We honor every title that we have because they're all important, and people forget that when they see us in these social media spaces is that, oh, he's a trainer. And you know, I run a middle school program with over 200 and some kids, and I have to remind parents, like, hey, I'm a husband and a dad too. Yeah. Like, I love taking care of your kids, but I like taking care of mine a little bit more.
For sure. And it's funny you even say that. Like, that's really finding that balance right now. And there's so many trainers, coaches, young coming up, and like, you can get engulfed in it real quick.
Yeah.
There's always another client, there's always more video to watch, there's always more people to meet or to network. And that stuff's amazing. You never want to discourage that, but how do you find that balance of whatever? And maybe you're not at a place to have a family yet, or like, how are you carving out that time to do that, yes, take care of yourself or anything? There's just so many ways of it. And I definitely can sit here, raise my hand, haven't been perfect the whole time, but I'm in that constant, I'm in development as a business. If I'm not working on that in my own life, yeah, and with my relationships and my day-to-day, like, so I always try to challenge myself, like, are you doing exactly what you ask other people to do in the basketball world,
yep,
in your own life? So.
Absolutely. I'm in that journey right now. So, yeah, absolutely. So we start the show off with the Wall of Hoop movies. Your favorite hoop movie of all time and why?
Oh, man. There's so many, as you can imagine. Couple brought back so many memories, but one that always stuck with me, you know, growing up being a white guy trying to carve my path into this, in this basketball world, growing up in a small town in Massachusetts, but above the rim. Like, I used to think I was the man listening to Tupac, like, not loud enough so mom could hear, but, you know, and here I am on the West Coast as it is. I always dreamed about coming to the West Coast. I love it. But yeah, I was a big Tupac fan, and above the rim when that came out. And,
man,
you
know, that soundtrack was amazing with the movie. And
just the hoop, the lifestyle, like the toughness of it, like, yeah. But I loved it. And then, like, I was a massive and one kind of guy. Like, that was what you threw in the VHS. And, you know, you watched all these old guys and all these moves. The same thing, like, in being in player development, even back then, and if I look back into, like, the root of, like, I was just obsessed with being able to do every move.
Yeah.
Now, when I checked it up with you, I probably wasn't going to, you know, stuff it in my shirt, pound it around, go the other way. But I didn't want anybody at any time to tell me I couldn't do anything on the basketball court. So I could do this move, I could step back, I could shoot from deep, yeah, I could take off and bang on you. Like, so that was just always my competitive mentality. So anyways, I looked at that above the rim and some of the moves and just the toughness of it. And, you know, so yeah, that would probably be, but there's a, man, looking around this room, there's some movies good that bring back some good memories.
Absolutely, absolutely. The one part in that movie always gets me is when he's in his high school game and just dribbling between his legs like 20 times before he goes. Like, I wish somebody would do that today. What would happen to that
kid? Definitely. But,
love it though.
For sure.
So when did you fall in love with basketball?
You know, it's interesting. Like, I played at a young age, so a lot of people will go that, but I was, I fell in love with tennis. And if I'm being honest with everybody right now, like, if I could go back and choose, I probably would have chose tennis. Self-taught, had my dad build a backboard, you know, just those old school, that had a painted line, and I just boom, boom. I took a few lessons, but like, same thing, I was like, I was a serving volley guy, so I loved Pete Sampras. And just played all the time, and I won 11 and 12 year old, like, Massachusetts state championship. And then my small school in Western Mass was 7 through 12, you know, five towns made up this school. There was no tennis. So that's when I really got it. Now, was I good at basketball at that point? For sure. But going into seventh grade, I didn't play tennis anymore, so I really got involved in basketball full time. I had the program was good. High school coach obviously took a liking to me and got into that. He owned a couple of gyms as far as like fitness centers, so I got into like the weights and things like that.
Nice.
AAU wasn't what it is now,
right?
Like, you know, which is different. But I didn't start doing that until like eighth grade. But Then I just became, I'm obsessive compulsive by nature and everything I can do. Sometimes that's a blessing, sometimes that's a curse, right, as we all know, and I could admit. But then I just, you know, I was like, all right, all of a sudden everything from tennis went into basketball.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's, I would say when I was about 12, did I become like, man, this is, I'm all in on this.
That's awesome.
Yeah, growing up, played soccer, baseball, all this stuff, like just super competitive. So I loved anything. And that's what I loved about, I played golf later in life now, and I would rather go play tennis for an hour or pick a ball and sweat and feel like I got something.
Yeah.
But I love the mental challenge of golf. But like, that's what I loved about tennis is basically I was so competitive, but it was only I could only look at me. Like how, you know, you can't look to your left, right, couldn't blame nobody. That's sometimes about those individual sports, but obviously being team sports is incredible. So yeah, I would say about 12 years old.
So you're a first generation hooper?
Yep.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And so that the coach, the school you went to, kind of developed you through the game.
Yeah.
Like, so we didn't have developers and coaches.
My dad was a very good basketball player.
Okay.
Played at UMass with Dr. J back
in the day. Oh, okay.
Rick Pitino. Yeah, I apologize. So yeah, my dad was a really good athlete. And then he jokes, as I joke now with my kids, is like, he just wanted me to be a better player than he was. And I definitely surpassed that. But now that same thing, like for me, I don't even look at it as basketball players. I want my sons, I have three sons and a little girl. I want my sons to be better men than I am. You know, that's like, as a father, like one of my main goals is just here's some of the mistakes I made. Here's some of the things. And we'll talk about that later. But, but yeah, so dad was very good athlete, tough, competitive, athletic. That's where I get a lot of my athleticism. So I think I get my like, grit and competitiveness probably from my mom's side, like, but she was 5'3", so let's put it that way. Dad was 6'5", long arms, very athletic and tough, so I kind of got that. But yeah, parents separated when I was young, about that same age, but everybody was still around, and basketball kept us together, which was cool. I had an older sister at the time, and I have a younger brother, very good athletes, but my high school coach, you know, ended up kind of being that father away to a certain extent, but just literally picked me up, drive me to the weight room, drive me to that, this or that, you know, playing one-on-one in the backyard. Like, he was young at the time, 30 something. So, you know, it's unique to see all the years later, like when I stopped playing at 30, my family tragedy, all of a sudden I was doing that exact same thing for young athletes.
Yeah.
A couple of those guys are training now at my gym or just seeing like,
nice.
So yeah.
Full circle.
Full circle for sure.
And that's awesome. No, it's always interesting how the things from our childhood and the things that we experience are the things that motivate us to build and do what we do now, right? And even though we do it, you do it at a high level on one end, you still have your heart and your passion is built into that.
Yeah.
I have to ask, when that moment, because it sounds like it all happened at the same time, right? Your love for basketball, your parents separating and all of that, what was your mindset stepping into that for kids who are families who are going through that? What kept you focused on your goal? And you know, what was around you to help you just stay focused?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm so thankful that my mom and dad, we found a program and a coach and a situation. We didn't have a ton of money, but we weren't poor either, I'm saying. So we stayed in public school like everybody did. But we just found, I say all this to go through it fast with you, like my mom and just dropped me off and trusted the process. Now, I say this coach was one of, you know, groomsmen in my wedding back, you know, moving forward, but he was tough. Like, you know what I mean? There were times, I mean, I probably quit basketball 5 times in high school. Like, I would walk the 4 miles home because he was my ride, but I got kicked out of practice. So I sit here and, like, you know, competitive in things like that. So, but I'm just so thankful that they trusted the process and did that, you know. And I battled that as a parent too, because you're always trying to find the perfect situation. And now, like I mentioned, now there are so many schools, charter schools, prep schools, you know, all these things, a million different AAU programs, clubs, things like that. Back then, there's probably 2 AAU teams in the state of Massachusetts.
Yeah.
The majority of the really good players were in Boston. I was on the other side of the state. And then it was like your high school club, or you went to camps. Like,
yes.
I went to 5-star.
Yeah.
Slept on a terrible bed. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Garfinkel, like, on me, you know. So that, and I think that's lost in this day and age too, is like just camps, like going somewhere that old, like tough, where it's not, the food ain't great, the sleeping ain't great, you got stations 13 hours a day, you're on blacktop, like.
I love those, man.
And that was the thing about like, and we did all that stuff, that I was forced to get better. So I was competitive by nature. All right, cool, we're gonna put you in these situations and see. And I think that's missing a little bit in this day and age. But yeah, though, that was, I was so thankful that my parents, you know, like I said, trusted the process, dropped me off, and let me grow through it.
Yeah.
But I think the driving thing for me is like, I was so competitive. I think my mom saw how happy I was. And if she could hear the basketball dribbling at 6 a.m. or midnight, like, I'll be honest, as a father, sometimes my greatest sounds or peaceful is like hearing the basketball dribble in the backyard.
Yeah.
Not at our private gym that we own, you know, not at a scheduled workout that I've created, whether it's with me or a trainer. I'm talking about my own kids. When I just hear it on their own, or I hear the lacrosse stick bouncing against the wall, or my son throwing his fishing reel and like just on the grass and working on the skills that he just probably watched in some YouTube short, man, does it, like, my heart just smiles. So,
yeah.
And those were, that's what I had. At the end of the day, being a 6'4", scrawny white kid from Western Massachusetts, like, to be able to make the NBA or to play at all those high level, there's a competitive fire, but there was also, like, I didn't have all the resources that I'm able to create for people now or to create for my own family. Now, I had some really special people, but man, there had to be such a drive for me to create, you know, the settings, the workouts, and the drive to, you know, I remember strapping on my strength shoes.
You know, man, like, things mess my knees up, man.
Like, yeah, exactly. Now I walk, but you know, me, it was like the ankle weights, whatever.
Yep.
Calf raises. I put a suitcase here. I'm doing quad extensions, like whatever. Like, so man, it's now talking about those times or whatever. So I try to create those times for my kids and my family, but sometimes, obviously, you still like you. We have these resources, we have these things, or things are at such a different level now.
Yeah.
So I have to even catch myself, be like, no, this is, you know, different. But yeah, that's probably at that time and age, you know.
Yeah. No, the equivalent to what we did with the ankle weights and strength shoes is, like you said, them going to do it on their own or saying, hey, Dad, I want to work out. And that, you know, self-starter mentality is that's what we had. We didn't have the resources, so, man, I'm saving all my money to get these. How much for strength shoes? Like, they were expensive, $175 or something crazy like that.
Yep.
And so, no, it's like you said, it's good to try to develop that inside for your kids, but most of it has to do with trusting the process and releasing them to the game. And so, so you played high school basketball as a middle schooler.
Mm-hmm.
What was that experience like?
Yeah, same thing. School was 7 through 12, obviously, so essentially we were allowed to do it. So as an eighth grader, I played JV and varsity, and which was amazing. Like, and for the development-wise, like, my coaches might have been ahead of the game or whatever, but it's like, all right, he's going to play 3 quarters of JV and then be available for 1 quarter. Like, as I developed or whatever.
Yeah.
And to me, at the end of the day, like, having that skill development, we'll talk about it, but like getting that play stuff is important. So there's even to the parents out there that have kids that are, whether they're freshmen, sophomores, whatever it is, and like, you know, I just want to be on varsity. I just want to be on this EYBL team. Like, man, even my son now, like, it's about the playing experience and this and that. Like, nobody remembers this stuff 5 days after the Peach Jam ended or whatever,
right.
You know what I mean? But it was like, did we get the layer, all the skill development, all the weight stuff, and then get the actual playing time?
Like, yes.
So I was so thankful learning back then. That's why it stuck with me, and that's why I'm a stickler on certain things, because I saw like that experience. I was playing against, for me, it was like grown men. So I remember being in eighth grade in practice, like against a senior who I loved, like looked up to, and still like really good friends. But like, I was so, for like one moment, long story short, like Lou's body, he like literally picked me up and threw me into the ball rack. He's like, why are you playing so hard? You know what I mean? But then it like stuck with me, but that, like, not a traumatizing thing, but like, it was just, but like knowing that I had to, you know, claw, scratch for everything I had at that moment.
Yeah.
And I loved it. Like, and ever since then, I was always driven to like, want to be around the best players, to be in games or workouts where I wasn't the best player. But it drove me to prove that I belonged, and then ended up, before you know it, like, boom, 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 you are the best player. But then you're searching for everything, or then you're trying to create, like, I want to have, whatever, we're playing 5-on-5, I want to have the worst team, so we're not expected to win. That's how my mind was, you know? And now, even as an older parent, like, whether I'm playing Uno with my daughter or kid, like, I have to try to shut it off sometimes, you know? Like,
I don't. My daughter, I do thumb war with my daughter every night. She cries every night, like, you got to get used to losing, or you got to figure out how to beat me. And, like, she's 5.
Yeah.
But you have to learn. Like, I want to create that because, like you said, we have the resources where they don't have to grow up like us. And so you have to create that chip on your shoulder, that competitive edge. And it only can come from us right now.
For sure. And it's awesome. My wife, I could argue, is the complete opposite, but it's what makes everything work.
Balance.
Like, my oldest son is, you know, the sweetest, kindest, and like, I mean, he's literally 7 days old, flew to Croatia. He's lived all over the world. He speaks 3 different languages, and he's a very good basketball player. But like, so he has her spirit, and now starting to see it clicks in kids all differently, which was part of my journey as a parent learning. And like, now to see the competitive fire. We were just down in San Diego, said, all right, you have the weight room for 90 minutes. I'm not coming in to tell you what to do. Or Mike Guerrero is not driving this workout, or Andy Barr, like, and it was interesting to see him in there for an hour and a half, well, and probably 60 minutes, come out sweating and felt like he got a good word. He had to create it. He had to, whether he put it in his iNotes or just wrote it on the whiteboard, like, so those type of moments. When you start to see it click, it also really humbled me, you know, because it's his journey and not my journey. Like, it's different, you know what I mean? Yeah. And those were, we can talk about it later, those were some of the hardest moments where you had to take a step back and wait a sec, we're actually way ahead of the game, and here I am getting caught up in comparison to how I did it in my time, in my circumstances, and his are completely different.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's good. That's great reflection. That's good. We'll hop into that for sure. So your high school journey, what was it like playing basketball in Western Massachusetts and the competitiveness level, and what prepared you to play at the next level?
Yeah, so same thing. My high school coaches, both the head coach and the assistant, Coach Davey, they were super competitive. We worked hard. My head coach, Perry Messer, was best friends with John Calipari at UMass. So nice. Think of this was UMass's kind of glory days, Calipari early in his career. So I would finish practice, I would drive with him, we'd go watch UMass practice. So I would see that intensity, that communication, that athleticism, that style of basketball, and how hard John Calipari coached. Incredible motivator, but he was demanding, like, seeing it. So that was awesome. So just kind of growing up, and then UMass had basketball on fire in Western Mass for a while.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So think of that, too. It has since shifted a little bit. And then, because we don't, to be honest, Western Mass and Eastern Mass, there's not a lot of love there per se, or there's not a lot of respect for Western Mass kind of size. You can say big city stuff. And then in my area, like, you think of Derek Kellogg, Edgar Badia, and then like Travis Best, arguably the best player from that area in my whole career. So there wasn't a ton to, and then, so my next, I'm always looking for an edge or an advantage, was like no white guy from this little area is gonna go to play in the ACC. And I believed at the time the ACC was the best conference. This is old ACC.
Right.
So I immediately became fixated, like, I'm only going to an ACC school. I'm gonna prove everybody wrong, you know? So only visited ACC schools as I started to grow. So I kind of obviously had a name, was building up, scoring a ton of points. We were winning a ton of games. Perry, at that time, we had 20 games a season. 18 of them were in your conference. So we were the smallest school, so we had to play those. Mm-hmm. So we had 2 independent games. It's since changed in the thing, but he would always pick the 2 toughest Division I teams, you know, just for our experience.
Yep.
We beat those teams, like, you know, whatever. Whether that might have been a Central, it might have been a Holyoke, whatever, the big cities in our Western Mass. So it was cool for that experience, knowing that he wanted to gain any advantage going into the kind of tournament. We won a ton of games, played locally AAU, and this is to all the AAU people out there, just a small team, and we would go, like I said, there was probably 6 or 7 teams that would go play for the state championship in Boston, and if you won that, you went to the national championship.
Right.
Depending on how big your state was, sometimes the second place, you know how that worked. And that was it. Like, that, right. You know what I mean? We go down there and we get beat by BABC, which is still a powerhouse in the area, or Greater Boston, things like that. But I always played well and it was competitive. And, you know, long story short, one of the players left Greater Boston to go to BABC, opened up a spot for me. I had always played well. So I took it there. Now I'm 16 years old, just got my license, and I'm driving an hour and 45 minutes to practice in Boston, an hour and 45 minutes back, like 4 or 5 times a week.
Whoa.
Yeah, my parents, like, I don't even want my son to drive to 7-Eleven.
Right.
He's
17
years old. Here I am. Like, but same thing to the commitment of it. I knew, my family knew it was the best thing for me. High school culture was like, you're out of here. This is the next step. You need to take this. And so went there, and then I actually teamed up with Dan Gazurek at the time.
Oh, cool.
You know, played a long career in the NBA, UCLA. And we never lost to BABC again. We went on and then that's where I really started to explode. I was more on a national level now. Mm-hmm. We were an Adidas team, you know, played in the big time, all those things. And obviously could have went to any college I went to, but I had kind of fallen in love with the ACC. But yeah, and I always remember those experiences, even when I was a little younger, going off to five star, going off to this AAU stuff and like those experiences, and then seeing the level of players, how good they are, it motivated me to get better. Where I would come back into my local area and the game felt easy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But those comps, so I didn't always have success at that national level, but it wasn't a failure either because I came back. One, I knew what I needed to work on. Mm-hmm. To be like, okay, cool, I'm gonna get out of my little bubble in this area.
Yeah.
But also, like, I had success here, and success breeds success. Like, so it was interesting. Where I then started again, like, I can't wait to get back to that top level. Like, I wanna see where, now I've worked so hard, let me see where I'm at.
Yeah.
And I just kinda kept growing. Like, as a freshman, not even ranked in the, you know what I mean? Sophomore, not even ranked. Like, ended up being, you know, in the top five in guards in my country and top 20 player in the, you know, by the end of it.
Wow.
And you can look the opposites, never, like who was number one as a freshman.
Right.
Like 155.
Yeah.
It just, and that's the crazy thing about development and that. And it's like, and it is an overwhelming thing, and you can get caught up in all these rankings and all these games and all-star things. And it's like, at the end of the day, if you're growing the right way, like it all, like,
it's all in the
work. Amazed at the stories and the things. And sometimes us parents can be the worst enemies because we get caught up in that comparison of where I am, or hey, do you get free shoes yet? Do you do this? Do you, like,
right.
You know what I mean? Are you trying?
Right.
Like, and that's an amazing exposure as well. But to me, it always just came about the development and this constant state of doing this.
Yeah.
And then like I matured later, hit puberty later, like grew, like I was scrawny, I was strong. But, and then when I grew into my body, I had a foundation of footwork. Like all the things that I
fundamentals,
teach now,
yeah.
Like, I just kept doing this, and there were, you know, we all have these kids that, one, we don't know how old they are, like, you know, or they physically mature really early,
right?
But and it's great, like, and then they end up doing this.
Yeah.
You just grow, like, you know what I mean? And but they never took the time to work on the skills, the
yeah.
fundamentals, like, and so that can only take you so far.
Yeah.
And I was just, even now with my kids or anybody I'm training young, like. We are all about the first thing that happens is your feet hit that hardwood. And like, we're gonna get that right.
Yes.
And everything else. We always say like, those who are planted will flourish, and we can let God's creativity flow out our fingertips.
Mm.
But it all starts here. So being really a stickler on that stuff.
Yeah.
And I've just seen people where then it just keeps doing this and this, and like, oh my God.
The foundation set.
It's like at the end of the day, like I didn't play golf growing up, and now trying to learn it as a 21-year-old.
I'm terrible.
Those habits, like, so it's the same, like, but if I learn to swing at a young age, or like you know,
yeah.
my kids are a tennis rack, like, it becomes natural. Like, you're like, but try and teach, you know, it's the same with like footwork and all those things. Like,
right.
you're essentially trying to break habits that have been established for a long time. And it's possible, but it's a lot harder.
Oh, yeah.
Where if you can get those things right, you just
got to break it down to build it up when
yeah.
it's, yeah, no, I like, that's why I like, I didn't start playing until I was 11. Same kind of same
yeah.
thing. Well, I didn't even play any sports, I think. I just played tag and whatever else, red light, green light. And then I didn't start playing until I was 11, so I was a blank slate. And thank God I had really good coaches. I had my cousin who was teaching me N1 moves as well,
yeah.
which helped with my creativity,
yeah.
but my coaches were fundamental. Like, the first thing I learned was how to defensive slide. And
yeah.
that's been my calling card through all of basketball is, hey, Todd, go guard him. From middle school to working with Chris now, I was like, hey, Todd, we need somebody to guard so-and-so.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, let me. And I that foundation, like, that's where I start. It's the
yeah.
same thing. That's where I start now with the training and development.
Yeah.
So,
and that's one of the, like, the misconceptions of it is, you know, that right there is people will look at pro workouts. So they'll often ask me, like, what do you do with Kevin Durant? What do you do with this or that? And they'll be a bit like, how simple and fundamental it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, internet, social, all that stuff's a great resource. You can find incredible. I'm inspired by either people I follow or just randomly if I get caught up in, I hate to admit it, if I get caught up in some reels, what gets showed up, you're like, oh, that's cool. And you can take your own spin off it or whatever.
Right.
But there's also a lot of stuff that I don't think is super relevant. Or people get fixated on that, but the fundamentals, the balance of it, the simplicity of it, like I'm working with a pro right now, and it's amazing how simple, and I'm able to bring my son around on some of these trips, but for mm-hmm. him to reinforce it of like, master this stuff. I mean, Kobe said, I mean, you can go through a lot of these pros, or even when you listen to Katie talk about the simplicity, or if somebody was privileged enough to go to a Chris Johnson workout, you would think
right.
it's this crazy elaborate. Man, it is the details, the balance,
that's
and
it.
Then getting these players to completely understand why they're doing what they're doing.
Yes.
To me, that's real buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
And great trainers have that connection and that trust, and you build that relationship. But it's, I will say this to everybody out there, it is way simpler than you think.
It is so basic.
But you end up mastering it.
Yes.
And then you move on to the other stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, and so often so many people are so like, but they can't stop on balance. You can't do this, you know? And then you talk about raising your percentages from 48 to 52. If you want to talk NBA level, that's $4 or $5 million a year difference.
Right.
If I can go from 38 from 3 to 41, we always joke it's like $1 million a percent. Or about the same thing, it's this scholarship or this amount of playing time in college.
Yes.
Like, think of those. It's not jumping at 10%, like, but if I can raise, you know, think about efficiency and all the things that are trending and shooting and all these things, attacking closeouts, all that comes to balance, repetition, understanding the details.
I'm getting them going on the basketball. Yeah. We're going to reel it back. Reel it back. All right, so the ACC was your goal. You go ahead and take a sip. I'll talk for a while for you. ACC was your goal, and you accomplished that goal. I want you to go back to the hard work. You said you would come and kind of get this assessment at the high level and then go back and get to the hard work. If hard work was two sentences, what does that look like?
Yeah, I think it's the model now, like we just talked about NBA guys, like to me, consistency and intensity are the two words, forget about sentences, words that people have a hard time understanding. And to me, I wanted to have a professional mindset at a young age. I was not privileged to be around any professionals. I went to Robert Parrish D-Brown camp in Boston as a 12-year-old, but I didn't have the access to professionals like my kids now do, or people that come to my gym in the clubhouse. You know, you're in and out, you might bump into Hamidou Diallo, you might bump into KD or Sabrina, you might bump into, you know, a professional in Europe or whoever it is, and you can ask these questions or see it. But to me, the biggest thing is consistency, and people struggle with that, you know? And if you want to take it to another level, it's being able to say, if I choose to do weights at 8 a.m. every day, it is 8 a.m. every day.
Right.
It's not 8 a.m. this day, 4 p.m. the next day because I didn't feel like, or 12 or whatever. I'm never going to tell people not to get their workout on because schedules can change, but I've seen the pros at the highest level, they do not negotiate
clockwork
with themselves.
Clockwork, yep.
You know what I mean? And that's like, and those are the, always talk about these degrees of separators and things like that, to that consistency of it. So even getting my son, like, he's a 17-year-old boy, like, likes to sleep, whatever it is, you know what I mean? But we said, this is the time.
Yeah.
This is the time. And then being able to, there's such a discipline in that.
That's, you know, the word, I'll say that.
Be disciplined and have discipline. They're two different things. Hmm. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's the same thing. I can say I'm disciplined because I work out every day. But man,
having
is it at this? I said it was this time. You know, and then the intensity of it. So what I learned, even being so privileged to be around, like when I was a pro and go past the ACC to the SEC to making the Mavericks, like being around Dirk and Steve, my first as a rookie, like I learned right away. Wow. Michael Finley, like, I mean,
oh, man.
Incredible.
Yeah, some vets, yeah.
Avery Johnson, like, oh my God. But just then the intensity of things. So we can often now think of like being in the gym for hours, you know, like that's what we should do. And that was an old school mentality too.
Right,
and I definitely, because that's what was around, that's what I did. I spent hours, you know, flipping the ball out to myself, inside pivot, one dribble pull, like,
yep.
You know what I mean? Whatever it is, give my own rebound or whatever I had. And now I just learned about the intensity and the efficiency of workouts. So even, you know, being around Nash as young, like, oh, I was gonna make 50 pull-ups every way. Now it ended up being like 4 perfect ones.
Mm.
But you know, what do we deem perfect? When we talk just about footwork balance, the fundamentals.
Yes.
Like it was, so then seeing that, like, and then being able to, obviously, as I played through my short career and then I got into training, like being able to take that to the clients and understanding that, one, you can actually attack more things, but it just became like, the consistency and the intensity of the workout, like everything. If you're privileged enough to be able to see Kevin work out, it's the same thing. You can watch one thing online, but it's a different when you can hear the sound of the basketball.
Mm.
You know, it's like any pro, like,
right.
Watch tennis, like boom, the sound different, a golf ball, whatever it is. When you see pros up, then you can hear it.
Yes.
And the snap, the gather, the footwork. Sometimes you don't hear the footwork because it's so perfect. Mm-hmm. It's quiet, and, you know, it's not bad.
No, I got the table.
So anyways, like just seeing that, the intensity of everything being game-like. So people often will use that word freely, but
yeah.
What does that really mean to you? Mm. And then it becomes super specific to your game and the situation you're in, whether you're a seventh grade girl trying to make the junior high team or you're a professional, you know, whatever. Like what is that? How does it translate to my having success right away?
And I think that's as trainers or coaches, those are the conversations you have, and then how do you create these workouts and create these habits? So I learned them at a young age, and then they've just been fine-tuned to be like the same thing we talked about. How do I prioritize my day? Even with my, like, you know, trying to keep down my dad bod, I've got to be consistent and intense with it. Like,
with that, but, and then that brings in the holistic, right? What we're eating, how we're sleeping, everything that we're doing, and starting that now at a young age, I think I want to really tap into that. It's like, I'm sure some of it's innate and, you know, came from your parents or whatever it is. It's like, how did you get that mindset? Do you think that was actually developed? Are you able to develop that mindset, the mindset you have in kids to, man, I want to be a pro. Man, I want to outwork this guy. Man, I want to get better. Can you develop that?
Yeah, it's interesting. So, like, I don't remember anybody really having, some people have it. And I'm not, like I said, I look in the camera here. I had a cup of coffee in the NBA. But I still, as I gotten older, I never want to take that for granted. Because at that time, I was one of the 450 best players in the world.
Right.
Of our game, you know? And we all know the percentage is like 0.0002 of high school athletes become professional athletes in any sport. So I definitely look back at that. But I don't remember, I just remember having a drive to be competitive and to get every advantage because I like to just check it up with you and I wanted to create moments where I had to test myself on everything that I had worked on, but also to give me more intel on what I needed to get better at. But also the next level of sometimes this intensity stuff is, can I execute under pressure?
Yes.
And that's the hardest thing. So some people will think, oh, I'm in great shape, but can you execute under, you know what I mean?
That separates the superstars from a regular player in the NBA, right?
It's the same thing. And now there's just so much play per se, so much of this stuff, like, or there's just not enough of high level intense action. So I even look at a lot of teams, I'll go watch even a college practice or a high school practice or a hundred, like, and it's so often they don't ever get to those moments where I'm fatigued, frustrated. You and me just whatever. Now, but wait, now I have to execute the play, or I have to read this closeout the right way, or make the right decision and then downhill pick and roll. Like, so I think of those things, those are like those intense moments.
Yeah.
So we can sometimes create them in skill development, but at the end of the day, it's not the same. So
right.
I don't know how many people I have with pads or how many coaches or how much bump, not the thing. When now can, and this is what we used to do old school, but I was going to go to a park and play 3-on-3, not know who you are. And we're probably, you know, we're going to get after it. Like, and so that doesn't happen as enough now.
Right.
And we create these things, but, and there's some amazing code there. This is being created across the world, but like where you got to get into those moments and really execute. Those are the players that you see that actually have success as they go along. And I think that's where like Europe and this global game, like they learn to be pros at a young age or playing as grown men or having like coaches can be a little tougher over there, whatever. I get to travel the whole world and see it. Like,
yeah.
But seeing the settings of development that they're in, you know, it's super.
What is the biggest difference over there?
I mean, it's for me, like the two we talked about, like the footwork, the shooting, the skill development, they just do it at such a high level there. And there's so much, to me, there's three levels of it. There's individual skill development. So me and you can go work on a detailed specific skill, rep it, work it, do all that. Then there's small group development, you know, where now I have to execute that thing or a bunch of small-sided games or whatever you want to. Like football or soccer, you could say, like they do an incredible job of that stuff.
Right.
You know, then there's the team play. And I think European clubs or clubs, overseas clubs, they do an incredible job of having all three.
Got it.
And I think some of the best trainers and programs in the United States, they have all three. So it's one thing. So even as a parent, you can have like, you're paying thousands of dollars for training. And we love that they come to the clubhouse and potentially use us or whatever, like, you know, but it's all just individual. And there's not enough of the small group stuff, you know, where you're playing or, and then the team, you know what I mean? There's some people that are all in on this bucket where I'm just, all I do is play. You'd be like, oh man, we played in this tournament. We're traveling everywhere. You come back and like, you didn't get any better. Like you want to, you know, you think of that. Like, so it's all these. So even I basically took like what I was coaching in the NBA. That's how we did it there. Why would it be any different there? So the NBA for the last thing, to Chip England, who was like the pioneer for player development, you know, for all guys. I had a job in the NBA and all this stuff. Like he was one of the first that the NBA hired. So shout out to Chip England, one of the best to do it. I lost my train of thought now thinking about Chat.
Bringing in that style to the NBA.
Oh yeah, so think of that. Like now the NBA has invested millions and millions of dollars in player development over the years. Sports science, all of it. It's like that. It's become those now. It's 18 players, 3 two-way. They're the most important people, you know, in the organization. So, you know, taking what we kind of did there, like how we broke it down. So you have your individual coach, and then there was a ton of 3-on-3, a ton of 2-on-2, a ton of, hey, we're gonna play out of this horns action on this side. All the reads, all the things, like that's right. So one, I've learned this skill, whatever. Maybe it's a punch exchange fit. Like now I'm gonna have to read that live out of a 3-on-3 situation or whatever. Like you start to see. And to me, when you have success in the individual thing, then you have success in that small stuff, then it can translate to the game stuff. Yeah. So it's like how you, you know, and as a player, I wanted to see that build up. As a coach, I want to create that build up. So I just, like I said, there's just so much of that. And there were times, like for instance, if we were in Brooklyn and Kevin was on a return to play, I'm like, he couldn't wait to get to that 3-on-3. So we built it here. This, now I'm into the 5-on-5. And what I'll say this to a lot of coaches or trainers in there, like, you can create such habits and confidence in that small 3-on-3.
Yes, stuff. Absolutely.
And if you have, like, I mean, I can just go example after example. Like, Nick Claxton was young, big in Brooklyn, and Kevin was playing a ton in those 3-on-3 things as he was coming back from, you know, maybe a knee tweak, whatever it is, the situation. Mm-hmm. They built a connection and a relationship in that translate, you know. Yeah. Where it's like all of a sudden, hey, Nick, how do you want, I'm going to get you out of the pick and roll like that. So it's just cool to have sometimes those intimate things where I can actually learn certain things and reinforce them. So it's great whether you're just a trainer and you've got a bunch of different people, but if you're in these programs or whether you're in AAU, a club or whatever, like creating more of those, so take a piece of your offense or just general actions. Yeah. And that's what I love about, at the end of the day, you play basketball.
Yes.
Well, not enough kids know how to play the game of basketball.
That part.
Reed, I'm a bud, D-H-O-U, you're a good shoot, boom, yay. And then I'll get out, whatever. Or hey, when you go here, I'm gonna find this little window here. I will not be in the same. That's the purity of the game that I missed.
Yes.
You know, and I'll tell everybody out there, the air will come out of the basketball for you at one point. So blessed to be able to keep doing it. But those are the things, those conversations, how do we find an advantage to beat this thing or to, for us to all be successful. And I think that's what drives me as a literally how I've transitioned into a coach and a trainer is finding, I love that as a player to bring out the best in the rest of my thing or to be so methodical about how or where we can find advantages or what we can do better. I think that's what's helped me into this training game is now I walk into someone and see whoever it is and be like, immediately my mind goes to where do they fit in? How do we make this? How do we, you know?
Yeah.
And I think having that knowledge or that understanding of it is what will gain respect with clients, whether they're an MBA, WMBA, or a freshman in high school. You know, kind of thing, having that confidence of like, hey, I really know this game and I really know, you know, so. And then those lead to tough conversations. I'm like, this is really where you go. You,
yes.
What you gotta work on, you know?
Yeah.
But the great players, I will say this story before you ask the next question. Like, I've been with Kevin for 11 years. He has never once told me what we were gonna do in a workout. Has never once questioned anything we're gonna do in a workout. Now that is not to compliment, that's more of a compliment to how great he is.
Yeah.
And he came into, I've often used this word, he came into every workout with wide-eyed wonderment. He wanted to get better. How can you make, we always have wide on like when you walk into a Disneyland park, the kids.
Yeah.
Like the great players, they come, we had Devin Booker last night, just what do you got?
Yeah.
And every little advantage, pass of the ball, a different pickup, different footwork, is this right? And he wanted to know if it didn't feel right or look right, throw it back, we're gonna get four perfect. Like that mentality. So I often think of like, I'm very grateful for what I've done and like the from the eighth grade middle school girl I started with for $25 an hour, you know, when I first stopped playing to them, like they made me a better human than I've probably ever made them a better basketball player. And so I'm so grateful and thankful for that. But like that, back to KD, like that approach, that thing, you know, and you gotta find people you trust and do whatever, but it's like, that's the thing, if you really love this game, and these are the conversations that I've been able to have with all of my kids, whatever you love, if you really do, that stuff takes care of itself.
Yes.
Now you can be prodded along and coach a little bit, but man, when you're fully, just like when I wanted to go after my wife, there's nothing stopping you.
Right.
Think of the relentlessness, the creativeness, the resourcefulness. That was always in anything. And then so it helped me actually take things out of my life or help prioritize because I didn't have those same feelings.
Like the single focus.
That orange leather thing, man, like what? And that's what I really want to challenge. And there's not a knock on anybody or a trainer, a coach, or player. Like,
But you, if you say that means something, because you can be like, man, you love, do you love YouTube Shorts? Do you love your whatever, you know what I mean? Like, where are you finding your time, money, and resources that go into things you love?
Yeah.
And so that's even been in the challenge. Like, I'm having to prioritize. I love getting to make a difference in somebody's life that I will build everything around it to me and be, I want to be as sharp as I can for whoever I get to look across in the eyes or whoever I get to help. Because I love doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, man, so many amazing points. Karina's taking a lot of notes. That's a good thing. So just what that, it just relates back to what I tell parents all the time, is that love for the game. And I shouldn't have to question that about your kid. You shouldn't have to question that about yourself if you're not living vicariously through that kid. And being able to see their growth through the love, that process. And you'll see, like you said, man, you just touched on like just, that's development. That's passion. That's for anything in life though. Remove basketball.
Yeah.
Remove basketball. And when your kid says they want to do something, or you say you want to do something, that is the drive and force that you have to come with, where all distractions are removed and you're a student. You're a student. That's what I say it all the time. The people who are the best basketball players I know, and those are some of the best NBA players, are the best, most teachable people. They'll listen to me even though they don't even, probably don't even know my name sometimes, but they want the information and they'll process it and they want to get better. Yeah. And that's how we got to approach life. You're still doing it as a trainer. You're still doing it as a dad. You're still doing it as a husband, right? I'm always assessing, dang, could I say that to my wife better? Let me try this. should I say that to my kid? Or, you know, all those little things. And then that just makes everyone else around you better as well as yourself. So.
And I wanted my kids, one of the things I've done the best of recently is being able to admit when I'm wrong. And that we're all prideful. We're all like, you know, whether that's, hey, I should not have talked to mom that way, or answer the question that way, or whatever, or, you know. And I wanted my kids to see it firsthand in all aspects of my life, of like, that you can be wrong, you can admit you're wrong, and you can work to get better. It's just a constant state of it. And that was because you wanna be this, whatever it is, like, but, and it was so freeing. Like, all of my relationships with my kids shifted when I was able to, you know, and then all of a sudden you, like, my 12-year-old's like, yeah, dad, I'm sorry. I definitely shouldn't have talked to mom that way, or answered. I should have gone right away and done my homework. You know what I mean? Whatever it is, you start to naturally see it where I'm like, oh, okay. You know, and then I also like navigate it through whatever my kids get excited about or have interest in. Like, I immediately will have that same passion, and we're going to research and find the, you know, lacrosse. Oh, cool. We'll call the two best lacrosse players in the world. See if we can find a connection to them. But like, but just kind of being like, and you're seeing at the young age what they do love and interest, but also how they find that one thing where they're all in. Yeah. My son is all, my 10-year-old son right now is all into fishing. I know nothing about fishing. It's disgusting.
How did he get into fishing?
Yeah, like, I'm like, but
that's awesome.
I'm so motivated by seeing him look at a Netflix show or a YouTube short whenever he's allowed to watch it, and then literally going in the backyard and like trying a different, like, it's incredible. He fishes all the time, he catches things, but
I thought that was an anecdote you were saying earlier. He really does fishing.
Yeah, it's
that's so amazing.
Cool. Yeah, it's incredible. But I found me trying to rule my spirit to be like, man, we're gonna, and now I go cut the fish in half, or the worm in half, and I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, throw my phone as far away as I can so I'm not tempted to, like, so you can be engaged in it. But it's really cool, all navigating all of that stuff, and then have the kids, you, like I said, I'll just look out the backyard and he's in the backyard seeing it. You're like, you're winning. Like,
that's awesome.
You know what I mean? And maybe 2 years it's something different or whatever, but those habits that he's learning, or that passion or that love or that appreciation for the process of it, they're learning it at, it might be business one day, it might be whatever. Like, so it's exciting to see as a father.
Man, awesome. Your playing career, right? We'll do a blanket of your playing career, right? So you said you had a cup of coffee in the league, you played overseas, played in many different countries. Your overall experience, what were the toughest parts of it, and what were the bright spots of your career?
Yeah, I mean, obviously playing with the Mavericks, you know, you made a dream come true, playing in the NBA. So,
and I've always been, now my dream since, you know, even playing, I've just shifted. But we all have dreams. You dream of certain things and you're constantly chasing them. And, so one of the lows for sure is was getting waived by the Mavericks, you know? And part of it was I was a good shooter. I was an incredible athlete. I could score. I knew the game. I had a super high IQ and I was really competitive. And I was athletic. I don't want to say for a white guy. I was flat out athletic, but definitely for a white guy. You know, for instance, like I used to warm up Michael Finley every game. Like we play one-on-one, like just like all out though. That was like our warm up on the practice court before. Like, so I love that, but getting cut because I didn't shoot the basketball well enough. So they ended up cutting me and bringing in Antoine Rigaudeau, who was an older player from overseas, and you know, for the kind of the playoff run. And it shook me to my core. It's like the first time in my career I've been told, like, again, like, wait a second. Well, one, I was the 12th man on the team, so I'm not gonna lie to that. You know what I mean? But like, always realizing, like, the first time you weren't on a team because of a specific thing. Like, you need to do this better. So my mind immediately went to, like, all right, I'm going to Germany and I'm gonna spend, I went and spent like 3.5 months with Holger Geschwinder, who's like literally probably the biggest influence on everything I do in training. You know, it's Dirk Nowitzki's long time.
Oh, guy. Okay.
Yeah, the legend.
Yeah.
And a credible footwork guy, you know, finger, just blew my mind away. I went over there, I'm in Rattelsdorf, Germany, this hole in the wall gym, which I, you know, people have seen Dirk's documentaries and things like that. It's just so impressive that a guy like never wavered from, but we all have those nostalgic places or gyms like that you have that are just so special. So ever since then, whenever I travel now, like, and I see these cool, I love like a cool hole in the wall gym. Like, it just gives me goosebumps. I'm like, yeah, we better get the sweat in here. But anyway, so I went there, spent time and literally transformed all of my footwork and came back the next year and like won the first ever NBDL 3-point contest at the New Orleans All-Star game. I shot like 48% from three that year with the Tulsa 66ers. Yeah. So like I literally became like an incredible shooter there and I still had all the other pieces. But it was so, that was like one of the most, I guess you could, one of the biggest shifts in my career. Now, never played in the NBA again, but I got really close again, ended up tearing my meniscus right when the Cavs were about to call me up. They ended up calling up Billy Thomas. And then I navigated overseas. You know, I initially had tried to do a deal in Italy right after the NBA, but I'll be honest, I look in camera, my mind hadn't shifted from the NBA to Europe yet. So I went over there and I was like, this is the weight room? You haven't got paid yet, per se? Like, Neven Spahia was a young coach then. Neven Spahia went up to coach in the EuroLeague, was assistant with the Hawks. Incredible coach. I can look back at it, I don't ever live in the regrets. I probably should have stayed there, like, you know, started my, you know. But I came back, played in the old, I played for the Columbus River Dragons then. This is back in, like,
this is the D-League days.
Yeah. Right. Drive 16 hours, like, you're eating at Shoney's in Golden Corral. Like, now the G-League's incredible. Like, you guys have no clue. Like, but did that thing, and then, you know, long story, I eventually did a deal in to go overseas, and then my mind had shifted. To be like, man, this is high level basketball. I'm a pro. And I'll be honest, ever since I had come back to the G League one more time and had done really well, but and got invited to do a couple, I had, you know, basically done NBA twice undrafted into training camp and made it. Like, I love the same thing. There's your competitive nature again.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna give you everything I got. But at this point, I, with, you know, starting a family, I was like, I'm gonna go over there for this period. And we just ended up loving it. Part of the reason I still love to travel now in Europe is like, I love going into a new country, trying to learn a new language, finding a pizza place, somebody that might speak English, you know, the fresh bakery, like, it's just such a cool challenge. And even when I do that in the United States, like going to a new place, even in the United States, I just love it. It's something. So I did that. So lowest point was probably getting cut. Like some of the highest points, like I said, looking back now, my son speaking different languages, my son being 7 years old, flying to Croatia, like, and that lifestyle and that travel and that thing, like, is right reason now he can travel and be a part of, like, all it. It's just easy for him.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm very thankful for those moments. But and then I was 30 and I had a family tragedy. So I lost my sister. She's 33 years old, stage 4 undiagnosed colon cancer, and was 8.5 months pregnant. We lost the baby boy too.
Oh, man.
So it all happened in 24 hours. I was in Europe. I was in Poland at the time. I came back. This was the end of the season. I'll be honest, I was staying there on the Baltic Sea to wait till I got all my money. That's what you do in Europe.
Right. Yes. Yep.
You know what I mean? I'm not gonna leave this country. But I ended up obviously leaving and came back and did the funeral. I was 30 at the time and absolutely loving playing in Europe. Like, just family. I was finally like even more mature for me, like embracing this. But I chose, took a year off, and my heart had shifted. I saw the outpouring at my sister's funeral. So she was like my best friend. Came to live with me with the Mavericks when I played there. Mark Cuban hired her as personal. She worked for Mark Cuban, the Mavericks, the NBA offices. She used to host all the Legends, All-Star games. She was, you know, she loved basketball more than, you know, me. She just couldn't play. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. She did play in a small school and then transferred to UMass. But everybody, she, you know, Dirk's big sister. She was just incredible, incredible spirit. So I saw the outpouring there, and I looked at it there, like in this moment, I had a reflection of like, if I were to leave Earth right now, and I'm a faith-filled guy, what would my legacy be? What difference, you know, and don't get me wrong, and here I am in Europe making good money, but kind of tucked away, and I was just challenged today, all right, what can I do? So we started a foundation, still goes to this day. We've given back over like $1.5 million, refurbished basketball courts in four different places, Haiti, and then we're about to work on one in Kenya. We've done a couple in the United States. So it's been awesome. So we've been able to keep it. It's a mom and pop, but it's bigger than a mom and pop, but it has a mom and pop feel. So it's awesome.
And what's the name of the foundation?
It's JHH Memorial Fund. So we kind of, my nephew's name would have been Chase. He would, you know, they couldn't save him at the end. So we kind of had this Chase Your Dream slogan. And I basically took a spin off what I thought my sister meant to me along my journey.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of, sometimes that's resources, that's mentorship, that's experience, you know, money. So it's as simple as we kind of have three buckets. We can send a kid to a camp or it's not always sports related. We've sent like groups, model Congress groups that have never been to DC, that performing arts groups that have never been to Broadway. We create those experiences. One of the coolest ones is like there was a cheerleading group from Alaska, won a state championship thing, could have went to perform at the Capital One Bowl in Florida. They needed to raise like 30 grand. We gave the last like 10, but I just envisioned this group of girls flying across the country, walking out to the Capitol, like in 70,000 people cheering. We all remember those goosebump feelings along our journey, and we still get them now, but like, we're like, man, I can do this. So we wanted to create those. And then the third bucket was like community projects.
Yeah.
Basketball is a big thing. So we kind of refurbished things like that.
I love that. That's one of my ideas. I have no idea how to do it. So we're going to talk about that after.
I love that. It's been one of the most refreshing things to see her logo, her memory, everything around. But, you know, and in that, you know, I had made some money, but we pumped some money into that. And my wife looked at me like midway through, was like, what are we going to do this year? And I didn't know if I was completely going to be done with basketball.
Right.
But I was like, I had a name in my area, so we moved back to my hometown. And like I said, my high school coach had a couple gyms, and I used these prep schools, so I just started training people. I started with a middle school girl, 8th grade, $25 an hour, and all she wanted to do was make the JV team. And that was my first client. And then I obviously built a business. She ended up making the JV team. And then, you know, I remember guys paying me with $10 to $5 sweaty out of their socks at the end of the workouts, you know?
Yeah.
And I would go from like 4 to 7 before school started, get my kids to school, go work out prep school kids during their off, you know, like their college schedule, and then be there again. And we live check to check, kind of per se, like, but it was awesome. Like, and then I started, you know, speaking and traveling, and then, you know, end of 2012, I had a mutual friend who became a mentor to Kevin and a really good friend, and kept saying, hey, I need to get you with KD. And KD, arguably at the time, his favorite player was Dirk Nowitzki, so there was a lot of connection. Long story short, it worked out to where we could do it in early 2013, and worked with Kevin one time. He hired me full time. At the end of that year, he won the MVP, so
MVP
my world
season.
Exploded. And I'm honest, yeah, Kevin, I'm forever grateful. Never thought I'd get into coaching. You know, at that point, I love this, you know, like obviously I'm traveling, you know, I'm still doing a lot of my local stuff. I have my sister's foundation and I'm traveling with the MVP of the NBA. So I'm like, this is awesome. Like, you know, got into 1 year coaching with the Thunder. That was the year Kevin gets hurt. We had a lot of injuries, but I became like best friends with Scotty Brooks. He kind of took me under his wing. He's my biggest mentor in my life right now.
Awesome.
He's going to be a Lakers assistant with JJ this year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, but, and I kind of fell in love with it. But Scotty lost his job at the end of that year. I ended up having a 4-year extension, but I decided to not take it and go out on my own again. My wife thought I was crazy. We had 3 kids at the time living in Oklahoma City.
This is when the magic happens always.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm crazy like that sometimes. I walk a lot of things out in faith, and they don't always make sense, you know, but that's part of it.
Before you get too far away from it, because I think it's important, how important it was for you to stop, reflect on your life and look at your real purpose, right? And the impact that you're going to have on the world. How hard was it to make that decision? And how would you encourage someone that's struggling with that decision to do it now?
Yeah, I skipped over a few things, but I had no clue, really. I started doing the training, and then you're always thinking, I had made good money, so immediately my thoughts went to be like, I gotta make more money. Like, what am I doing? I'm the head of the household, I'm the man. Like, I dabbled into the medical sales. I was miserable. The money was good, miserable.
Mine was like, financial sales.
Yeah. Like, and no offense, like, you know, so I remember that chapter of my life, and I was disappointed. I was sad, and I was questioning God, like, what is next? And so I had a really good friend, and that's, I encourage people to have mentors out there, have people that are really good at what they do, but also people you trust and can be honest with you. And, you know, it was more or less like, you're so good at this basketball stuff, and you have this, and God has put this basketball in your hand. You can still use it.
Yeah.
And I had just thought, like, it was a piece, but it wasn't. And I ended up being like, I'm going to put everything into this. And that tied the foundation, too. So it was like two things. Like, what do you love? What do you like? And that's what we can often, because of, especially when we have families or obligations and expenses or whatever it is, you can just lose this sight. And I just became like, all right, this orange thing that's taken me so far, I'm going to trust it to take me even further. And I just dove all my time. And I just... Same thing, we didn't, like, my first year, I think it was $25,000. Like,
dang.
You know, think about it. And then, but I gave, but I was so happy.
Yeah.
And I'm even in this chapter of my life right now where I'm not making as much as I did when I was in the NBA, but I am so happy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you can't put a price on the time I get with my kids.
That part.
I actually get the holidays now. Yeah. You know, whatever, I can choose my, I don't want to miss my daughter's recital. I'm not missing my daughter's recital.
Yes.
And I don't, like, and I respect everybody's, their hustle and the things they have to do and the sacrifices they make, but I really needed to look internally, like, what was important to me, you know, and what made me happy, and really then putting level, and now it's so hard with this, you know, with social media and all this stuff, you're in this constant state of comparison, or you can get, and all of a sudden I feel like somebody else is telling me what's going to make me happy, or like, I should be that, like, and it's so hard, it's so challenging, we all, no matter how perfect you be, man, we all have those temptations, or those fears and doubts and worries. I mean, I still deal with those things, but I just really got better at really reflecting on what makes me happy and what there's bad. And there's things that you just can't put a price on.
Yeah.
So I may not make as much as this trainer, this coach or whatever, but man, this is what I value. So this is priceless to me. Just like Chris Johnson may value this, and like that's priceless, which is so cool. But at that moment, like I just, and I reminded myself of what I love, what makes me happy, and then I literally let God breathe on it, and here we are all these years later.
Yeah.
And I always can look back to that basketball. But I had to rule my, I always remember when my sister passed, what sparked in me is I wanted to make a difference. You don't know what that's gonna equal or how it's gonna work or whatever, and I had to constantly remind myself that that's what I committed to, that's what I love, and that's what I wanna do. I just became obsessed with that. And I've always used that word, obsessed or compulsive or whatever, but like, that's what drove me, was like, how can, through the game of basketball or just in general, it ends up being a different thing, how can I make a difference in somebody's life? And that was through the foundation, but even now. And then there's been times along the journey where I've lost that sometimes. Mm-hmm. And even, to be honest, I'm being on the NBA, that can happen. NBA is an incredible place, the best of the best, but it can eat you up. It can be toxic, like anything in life. And then I got caught up, like, was I about that, or was I about me growing this coaching ladder? Was it about the title? Was it about the amount of money? Was I number one in my position? Whatever it is, you know, and where I kind of lost, like, wait a sec.
Because that's your competitiveness kicking in, right?
For sure. And I wanted to rule my spirit. Like, no, this was about taking one player and making them 1% better. Or this was about, you know, I mean, the stories are like when Spencer Dinwiddie was out of the league in the G League, come and like minimum guy and now making $20 million a year in the league. Like, it was about whatever I could do to help that guy. Joe Harris, you go down the list, Caris LeVert, and then obviously Kate, you go down through the list of all these players. I had to constantly remind myself, like, it was about them and me making a difference. Now, have I been along to have resource from my own journey? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I had to keep reminding myself of, like, why I felt like I was on this earth and to be able to use this game of basketball to make a difference.
Yeah. Now you had to invest into others and for it to work, man. That's amazing, amazing. Let's just talk about your training, your style of training, and the impact that it's had on the players that you've worked with. You know, KD's the most shining one. Like you said, after one session, he hired you. Like, it was, and a lot of connection to it and all that. You know, you see weird footwork drills is what the public would call it, right?
Yeah,
but you know, us basketball people know your balance and focus and all those types of things. What is your philosophy when you, you know, step into these workouts with, you know, like you said, a middle school or somebody trying to make their JV team all the way up to the pros?
Yeah, so it's so interesting. I mean, no matter if we were to walk into a court now and people were shooting around, or if somebody I was gonna work with, or you're like, hey, check out this kid, I'm gonna immediately look at their feet. You can tell so much about that. And having seen what it did and change my life and my trajectory and my career, and even just my, I never played in the NBA again after that, but my confidence and my ability, you know what I mean? Like, if I didn't go through that chapter of my life and reset that balance, for the lack of a better term, like, I wouldn't be sitting here with you right now, I don't think. And it was such a humbling thing for me to basically strip down everything that I thought at that moment in Germany in this crazy gym, and then to rebuild it to have where I now can flourish in so many different ways. And so sometimes you can look at people and it's a major project. You're like, oh God, the worst shooters are these tippy toe shooters. Like, it's really hard to recruit.
And there's even NBA players.
NBA players, yeah. 100%. Like, now, great players, like, you know, same thing. And we just talk about efficiency and percentages and things like that, that everybody values now. We're analytically driven in the NBA or at pretty much every level now. So those things matter. And to me, footwork, yeah, shooting, but it's your ability to attack a closeout. It's your ability to play second side. It's your ability to be on balance all the time to make another player better. People think of it always in a scoring mentality or things like that. And sometimes it's just, man, when am I foot right, the ball zings faster from side to side, the one more pass, whatever. You can just break that stuff down. So it just became so important to me. And you'd be amazed that when you feel balanced and powerful, it changes everything.
Yeah.
So immediately, oh my God, I feel that felt better already. And so you've already got them, like, that's the hook, you know, things like that. Like, where at the end of the day, if I can get this repeatable balance in things, I can do it over and over again, like, I become elite at something. So I always joke, like, what elite, like, they're able to repeat the same thing over and over again. So imagine catch and shoot footwork, then I'm off the dribble, then I'm off the move, then I'm with contact, then I'm relocating back, whatever it is. I mean, it's such an uncontrollable thing too, so I want to be able to control what I can control. And that's whenever my feet hit the hardwood, blacktop, whatever it is you're playing on, that it's the same. And I'm balanced and now can read and react and attack. And like we said, those, like the old saying is those who are playing will flourish, it's biblical, like, but that's the same thing. It's like my power starts here and it flows literally through my body and out my fingertips. Mm. And so many people struggle with this power strength because their feet aren't right. So then we try to manufacture power and that's where things go awry. You see guys that are, and I don't have, when it's all in one motion, it flows. And when I don't have it, then I'm here.
Yeah.
Being a flat, right, left, inconsistent.
Mm.
So to me, the first thing, most important thing is your feet. No matter what style of player you are, what your gifts are, what your skill set is, it starts there. Second most important thing is your fingers. This is the last thing that hits the basketball. So Dirk used to always talk about the power of the V, Dirk and Holger. Like, so you see, I don't know, if you watch old Dirk clips, he used to run down the court like this, and that ball, boom. So you think of, like, these are the last two fingers when you release, no matter what, that touch the basketball. So this is the power. So think of, like, the control. So for me, anything short or long had to do with my feet. That's my power. Anything right or left was my fingers. So we used to have triggers, like the heels or whatever. That was, boom, this repeatable motion. So some of, like, I say, worst shooters, second worst shooters are the people, like, if I was left, right, I'll do this perfect. And then they come in and do this. And what movement do you ever, you don't shoot a free throw like that. If I asked you to go in and do a power clean, you wouldn't do it like that. If I asked you to go in and dunk, you wouldn't do it like that. So it's interesting. So often, we'll have guys that shoot free throws, and they'll have a pretty good form. Like, you know, you're up and you're all up on emotion. You ask them to take a step back, and all of a sudden, they're just in this crate.
Right.
Wait, what?
Yes.
So it's interesting. You know what I mean? So, like, at the end of the day, it's repeatable in every action.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at some of the greatest shooters, you know, and that's the thing. Like, to me, form and all this stuff, don't get me wrong, there's, you know, and I'm not one of those guys. I'm looking in the camera, I'm not one of those guys, because you can look at them, the greatest shooters, the Reggie Millers, but what is the same is where it starts. And so I used to joke, all we always see, like, these big Kobe's big triceps, these big, I wish the cameras focused more from the waist down, because that ends up, and you'll see, like, Kobe, you go through a list of guys that talk about their footwork.
Yes.
And then the guys that master it then can get so creative with it. You know, but we keep it basic first, and then it allows, you know what I mean, where so often we go the opposite way. We get so creative, like, man, you're not on that. You're shooting 38% from two.
on your mid-range polo. Right. Like,
you're trying to step back every time, fade away, all these other stuff. Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of great players, but I will look at some of their numbers, and there's like, you should demand yourself to be better at that. And so then, what do you? A lot of times, and maybe sometimes it's not all forward. A lot of times, it starts there.
Yeah.
And it's really, can I break those down? Because then you got to think of, you're playing against the best players, and whether you're in high school or whatever, at least hot, you're playing against really good players still. Every advantage, when my feet, it has to start there. It's a physical game, it's a change. Think of all the change of direction, the stop and go, the acceleration, deceleration, all about your feet and change it. Like, you think about that. Absolutely. And so what's great too is like now with the sports performance, there's a lot of collaboration and carryover. And I think that that's important.
Yeah.
We used to be old school, we lifted this way. Now there's such, so like I would challenge parents and coaches and trainers to have that collaboration and make sure you're reinforcing the same. And that was so good. I learned a lot through my years in Brooklyn, like having strength and conditioning coaches, or even now with a lot of these trainers, whether it's DM or when I'm in town, like we're picking each other's brain, because some movements that you do here don't definitely correlate to a basketball. And that's right. Just the basketball in you. You're like, it doesn't work that way. But then there's like, hey, if I wanted to drive, kick, and relocate to the corner, what is the best way? So I'd ask Andy Barr, Mike, where you go down a list of these guys. And so it's really cool to have that dialogue, because then there, I'm like, we're, like I talked about earlier, we want to be in this state of like, how can I get better as a trainer?
And optimizing the performance all the way.
Optimize it there. Thinking of it, if I'm shuffling this or that, what is the, you know, shuffle to a flyby? Like how, and it's way simpler than you think. And so how then, so we always talk about, it's one thing to learn the move and to be in the right, but it's the next thing to be able to repeat it over and over again.
Okay.
And that's when fatigue and all that, we talk about just, so you think of like turnovers, missed shot, it's fatigue and like, then can I master this footwork when I'm dog tired? It's the fourth quarter. I've been hammered all day long. Like, can I boom execute? You know.
Love it.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
That was long-winded for.
No, yeah, that was like, exactly what was needed. Is because you can narrow it down to one thing, and I want parents to understand how important that is, because they don't think that, they think their kid should. Yeah. Steph Curry, Kyrie Irving, somebody else, right? Super side comment. Banchero is to me next up.
Yeah.
I'm saying this comment, you don't have to agree or disagree, but I'm looking in your eyes, so I know that guy has LeBron James potential in my eyes.
Yeah.
Just want to say that.
Yeah. No, he's incredible. we're here together next week. We spent last summer together a little bit. His agent is one of my dearest friends, longtime friends, Mike Miller. You know, we battled each other, played with each other for a long time. It was awesome. You know, him spending time with Kevin last summer.
Yeah.
Them getting to see, you know, it was Paulo, Chet, Jalen Green, Jabari Smith. We started adding a bunch of guys. Really cool for them to see Kevin work up close.
Yeah.
See it, hear it, ask questions, conversations. Some of the coolest part, this is what's so great about player development and the journey, was really the conversations off the court. You know, and I'll always, and that's where a lot of trainers, like those relationships, or even us able to create where people can pour into each other, like that's so important. So it was awesome. So yeah, I'm super excited just to see him, even what we were just talking about, to want to understand the footwork and the balance.
Yeah.
Because he is a monster. Physically. And so that, and we all know that runs out eventually, except for LeBron, that monster. but you know, you can even look at like LeBron's footwork, how he's evolved and changed.
Yes,
and
I shoot sure.
Like this, some guys that have changed as they, you know, so he's ahead of, to your point, he's ahead of the game.
Yeah.
You know, last year was incredible. It's going to be, so I'm super excited to, you know what I mean? And that's what's great is a lot of these guys are able to spend time with different trainers and different coaches, because I know what I'm really good at.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Do I have a why thing? But I also, and then there's certain guys that are amazing. That's what's so cool about the training stuff and where these guys are getting access to guys now. It's like, hey, I can really help you with this.
It's a team. It's a team.
And it's awesome. And so I don't always understand all the, there's a lot of training beats and things like that. I don't get into that kind of stuff, but it's like, it's amazing. And that's when we'll talk like, yeah, everybody's really good at what they do. So I really, even rule my spirit, I appreciate and can take so much from them. But I also know like there's times I can't be in town, but usually you see so-and-so and just have, as a trainer, you can have the, if you're really good at what you do and you treat people the right way and treat, you should never have to worry about anything. People will come to you.
Yes.
You know, and I'll be honest, I've never like seen that, like it's word of mouth or this or that, and I've been in and out of the NBA, so I haven't been able to grow it like that. You know, when you're with an NBA team, you're doing that. But like, I've always just been like, man, Adam, be really good at what you do. Continuously hone your craft and just treat people the right way. Like be a, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, and
it's always worked out there. They're just, now, do seeds of doubt, fear, worry, of course they creep in. Anybody that tells you that, they're not being real. You know what I mean? But then it's how you remind yourself, who are the people in your life that are sharpening you? I say iron sharpens iron, but like, and we're so often, you know, in this business, we're such encouragers. And yeah. We're always on. And we have to have the spirit, infectious, the vibe of the workout, the intensity, the passion. Mm. I'm 44 or someday, like, man, I get out of bed, I'm like, oh, here we go. But to find that, to prep myself for that, you know, but I say all that to be like, the encouragers have to be encouraged. So who in your life, when you're training, is pouring into you? Because we can only give so much, you have to fill yourself back up. And sometimes that might be a walk, that might be worship, whatever it is. That might be, yeah. I want to go sit at the beach, or hey, I go play pickleball, or I just go spend time with, for me, it's like time with my wife and kids, or whatever it is. And or like my own kind of workout energizes me, but constantly filling yourself up, because we can only give so much. And it's those moments when we get deflated and down, that seeds of doubt, fear, worry, comparison, yeah. all this negative, that's when they can creep in. And it's real. So it's how you fill yourself back up to be on the way to say, this is exactly why I'm here on this planet, this is what I do, and then just believing that it'll work out.
Yeah, my mentor always tells me we can only give out of our overflow. Mm-hmm. If we are not filled and overflowing, we're just emptying our own cup, yeah. and it's doing the actual opposite of what we think yeah. we're doing. So, no, that's on par. Training your son now, right? So he's getting this expert, high-level training, right, to us basketball people, which probably been normal for him his whole life.
Yeah.
What's that journey been like as a basketball developer at a high level, training your own son, being a trainer, being a dad, being an encourager, being the discipline, everything.
Yeah, such an interesting journey. As I mentioned to you before we started, like probably the toughest thing I've had to do. But it's in such a great place now. I've learned so much. I've learned more from him than he's learned from me, probably. Mm. You know, I always want to have that spirit anyways. Like, but challenge, the biggest thing I learned, that it was his journey, not my journey. And we can often say that, but we act a different way. Or our actions, our responses, our reactions can tell a different story than being tape. You're figuring this out, and I wanna, you know.
How do we show that?
Oh man, we roll our eyes, we get upset, we say sarcastic comments, we send messages. We often will talk to our spouse this way, like that, or you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Here we go again, Jaden, you know, he's sleeping in until 9:30. Like, oh, Adam, you wanted to work out at 6 a.m., you know? Then back to our earlier conversation, if Jaden is, he's like a, well now, you know, like a late morning, but he's a night, like he wants to go work, you know, out from 8 to 10 p.m., where I'm like trying to get my daughter to go to sleep so I can go to bed, right. Like, you know what I mean? But so even that understanding, like to a back of thing, if he's gonna be consistent with it, cool, that's his choice.
Yeah.
And then we need to hold him accountable to it. So even learning all of that stuff, you know, your coach's son, my son is an incredible player, has a long way to go, can shoot it, can play in any style of play, has a really high IQ. A lot of coaches' sons will have high IQs. And to yeah. me, that's such an important thing, to know how to play the game of basketball. If you can walk out on the court and instantly, how quick can you essentially scout who you're playing with and playing against to find advantages? Like, that's such a skill.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
How shooter, non-shooter, slasher, like this, that to find, like to affect winning or to affect being a part of a group moving in the right direction. So I always prided myself on that. Where that can lead though is you can always justify the right play or the right thing, you know, as a kid. So dad, that was, yeah. Oh, sometimes the right play was ball fake, go down and hammer dunk it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I used to be, so you get caught up like, well, you were 5 for 6 from three. Why didn't you shoot 8 more? Like
right.
that was my mentality.
Right. Right.
Oh, all right. You know what I mean? But like, and I will say this, he's just been a part of winning things and playing things. And I will often, sometimes I have my father hat on, the coach hat, and I can get them confused. And so what's great is I have a lot of coaching mentors or people in our space, and they're like, Adam, I'm actually getting more calls on your son than I am. And where I'm thinking as a dad, like, score more, do this, or, you know, it means
yeah.
take out more. We need, you know, like, so I often, it's so good to have those people in my life that remind me, if I looked at my son through a coach's lens, I'd be super, I want that player in my program.
I like that.
You know, like whereas that. A dad, I'm like, oh, you know, why hasn't UCLA called yet? Or like, whatever, you know, like, but you're thinking about it and that's all part of the process. And so when I look at it, so often when I look at other kids or when I have my program, I see it through that lens. And immediately when I was looking at my own kids, I was seeing it through a different lens. And I was like, wait a sec, like, you know, so it's cool. We have moments where I would be, you know, I would give the coach, I would say, all right, next 5 minutes, I'm coach, okay? The
gotcha.
Rest of this car ride, I'm dad. So, and sometimes they align. Like, there's also principles we have as a family. Like, this is what we stand for, whether it's body language or whatever. Like, and to be honest, my 12-year-old's a lot like me. He's not really competitive. Where Jaden's like, he never has an issue with any of that, but it's interesting. So there's some non-negotiables that correlate both ways.
Yeah.
But then there's times, like, as this and that, and that as a dad, man, and I don't even talk about it. It was so fun to watch you play.
Yeah.
That's like, the best there's part. No other place I'd rather be. Yeah, like, those, it doesn't even have to be about basketball. It's just like, man, did I enjoy it? And he might have lost by 20 and shot over it. You don't even talk about that. Like,
yes.
Dude, watching you out there, like, and so I just got better at that type of stuff and having those conversations. And then being aligned with it with my wife was the best one. You know, that was probably one of the most challenging parts, too, is like, well, but we are going to carry this message together. You know, because we can all deliver it different ways.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Hers is probably a little softer and a little sweeter than, you know. But then having four kids, all this, we could talk about this for hours, is like realizing just like when you have a team, all of them are different.
Man. Hell boy.
And as a coach, as a trainer, and as a dad, it's our responsibility to figure out how to connect with all of them. The old ways of my way or the highway or like with all this, it just doesn't exist anymore. And that's one of the challenging things being a coach. Or leading any program is, yeah, it's different. But shame on us if we won't take the time to figure it out and be humble enough to say, I'm gonna find out what triggers you and how to motivate you. Doesn't mean I still have to have the time or the toughness, you know, all that stuff, but
yeah.
It's all different. And that's what I did, like even being in the NBA, how do you find time to carve out for four kids that are all different? So we wanted, when I was traveling in the NBA, it's like, come home and you might have 24 hours, like, yeah. You know, whatever. It's like, and so you want to do stuff as a family, but then it's like, all right, Jaden needs this time, Jackson, Jonah, Jill, my wife, like you're, that's the hard
part. Oh, Jay's, is your wife name what is Jay?
No, but it goes back to, my sister.
There you go, okay, that's like, about Jay's, okay.
My daughter after my sister.
Oh, that's awesome.
But just finding it, that's, to be honest, when you look at, this is what's so respectful about the coaches, especially the really good ones on every level, is that it is really hard and time consuming to connect with it, but that's what's expected these days. So I look at an NBA head coach right now, and I've had this conversation with Scott Brooks, who's my best friend. Like back in the day, it was like 5 coaches on staff. There's like 17 to 20 coaches.
Summer league is crazy.
There's 18 players. There's a performance set. So whatever, you think a traveling party of 40 something, but like even if I'm a head coach, it's hard enough to find time to have coffee with every one of those.
Right.
I got to do it with my players.
You know we have to do that on 2K? When you do GM mode, you got to like talk to the guys and keep their morale up.
So impressive as you're trying to pour into everybody. Because everybody's trying to move in the right. Everybody wants to add value, whether I'm a player or I'm a fourth player development assistant. How can I add value? How can I add purpose? You're trying to have those conversations. That's what in parenting, like that's the same thing. How do I connect? How do I drive them? How do we bring them all together? And that's what's cool about player development, especially when you're with an NBA team, is like individually, then how can I get you in a small group? And then how can I do it all together?
Yeah.
That's the one thing I miss right now about not being in the NBA or part of college. I've really considered college in the last few years, but like it's so individually in the small stuff I can kind of create and do when I have individual clients or whatever, but it's about moving a whole group up together, which is really cool. And the way I'm getting it now is my business, but also my family. That's like arguably, when you think about it, being a part of it, of how you move a group in the same direction, that's super challenging and super fun and super rewarding.
That is like same thing. I haven't coached high school basketball because having young kids is just the timing, right? I want to spend time with the family. But that is probably my biggest thing is like, man, I just want to take a group of kids over a course of years and develop a culture, develop a family, develop. Mm-hmm. That is the best part. We got to move on because we got to get you out of here. Thank you, man. Thank you for sharing everything you did, man, and the vulnerability and the information. Yeah. I think it's some real nuggets in there, so I appreciate that. My Rushmore, all right? Your top four, we're going to get you with this one. Your top four trainers in the game right now.
It's unbelievable.
Not including yourself.
I'm gonna be honest, there are so many amazing, and I've been fortunate enough to somehow be connected to a bunch. Mm-hmm. And everybody does something really well. So I've always tried to, you immediately can get caught up in comparison and this and that, whether it's clients, whether it's a number of followers or this or that, like, I've always tried to, and this is what intentionally, what is the best of everything? And that's like, just looking at it through that lens and that spirit, like it changes everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You could immediately be like, oh, this or that or that. Like, no, like, what does Tim Martin do well?
Yeah.
What does Tyler Ruff? What does DJ Sat? Like, all these guys, and it's so, and it's awesome. And then every time, like, just being super, there's so many times that I met these people, just sending them a DM or somehow got connected and just saying how thankful I am that they've encouraged me from afar.
Yes.
And like, what, so it's like getting a birthday text. Like, we don't want, as we get older, but when you get it, it feels amazing.
Every time.
So when is anybody, I always tell my kids, like, when you say thanks or you smile or you send it, like, write a note, or when is everybody like, why did you do that? Why did you send me that? Like, so you just think about that. Like, who doesn't like to receive an encouraging thing? So I try to, like, find that way. And I really am thankful, but it's also, I know it means so much to those people because I live that lifestyle.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. I know, and that's what people, the average person, like, I respect so much about these, whether I loved everything that they taught or how they delivered it or their, or whatever, like, I respect the hustle and the, not even the, like, just the day-to-day.
The commitment.
When you have family and commitment and the travel and the this, and then being on and also honing your skills, and it's impressive. So I'm giving shout out to all trainers.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're not working in.
No, this is just fun, guys. His top four. You're a top four personally that you have.
In the military or in the hospital, like, that stuff is way above all this.
Yeah.
Like, but I respect what goes into it, and I understand it. Because there's a lot of goods and bads in it. There's a lot of chasing. There's a lot of, you know, things like that. I said Chip England initially. Holger Geschwinder, probably you put those two, like, as, like, they're just, they started it for...
The OGs,
yeah. Yeah, like, Holger, like, even globally, but just for me, like, he'd be here. But Chip England, getting to know him, you know, long time with the Spurs, with the Thunder now. No reason, there's definitely a reason why they're having success. He's really, really good. One of the most professional and well-organized people you'll ever be around. And same thing, he was a really good mentor in the beginning because he, you know, was individually. And the NBA, he was the first hire in that. Like, they didn't do that.
Right.
Like, these staffs were smaller and everybody did a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
But there also wasn't just a map. Guys used to leave for the summer.
Right.
And that's when, like...
Impact. All that,
exactly.
Yeah.
The guy, Tim Grover, the English coach... Guys would pay 50, 60, go to a place for a summer, know they could get everything. Now those places are almost extinct to a certain extent, and now everybody's just so mobile.
Yep.
You know, and then trainers and things like that. And now teams have invested and they send their coaches everywhere.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, I'll touch you here, you're going here,
yeah.
Which was a unique thing. So yeah, he really paved that way. Obviously, player development guys in the NBA, I'll do it a little different because it's so hard to do it. Phil Handy is obviously, I think. And I've just always been a dear good friend, dear good mentor, but his passion, like, and his care factor, like, those are the things, like, often aren't used enough with trainers. You always talk about, like, how good you are or whatever, like, and I've always said, you can know everything if you can't deliver it in a way that people can receive it, but also if you can't build a relationship where they genuinely trust you and, like, that buy-in, it doesn't matter. Like, you think of, like, so I've always just prided Phil on, like, his ability to connect and where guys will trust him beyond no honor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know it, whether they're a high level NBA player or not, like, that's one of the hardest things is in this day and age is trust. You know, everybody has their own stories. Everybody, you know, Ben Burn, this or that, but like when you can get somebody to genuinely buy into, and that's the thing. It's like, cool, I know basketball, but I actually care about you.
Yeah.
I know your family, your family, like, whatever it is, and that's on us to do the research and, like, find that, like, those connections. So Phil Handy there. So one of my favorites, and it's one of my favorite ones for Jaden to work with, is Alex Bazell. So Alex, I think, is one of the greatest communicators and teachers.
Yes.
And, like, he's one of those guys that I was joking. He, like, never raises his voice. He's, like, so confident, and his stuff's great. And I look back, he obviously, his story's great, is awesome. But being around Kobe and working with, like, the women and things like that.
Yeah.
And I always think people that started in youth, like, just have a gift.
Yeah.
So to me, some of the best trainers can take an eighth grade person and a W. Like, and there's no shift in how you approach it, how you treat it, or what you're teaching.
Yep.
To me, that's the biggest difference. And your ability to relate. And I always try to pride myself on you constantly. Like, if I were to walk into the clubhouse tomorrow and it's a group of 15 fourth graders, they're getting the same as they would if I walked in and had five NBA players at Proactive here in an hour. Like, and I think that that's a gift for trainers.
Yeah.
So I've always loved Alex. He just does an incredible job. I mentioned Tim Martin, got one of my favorites from a professional, like, so dialed in and inspires me from afar is Phil Beckner. So I was around Phil in OKC, and I just love, like, Phil, you'll hear stories like a player will come in and they might walk across part of the court while there's another workout, they're out. Like, or if you're late, but it's like, and Phil, he's incredible, but I just, like, I'm like, wait a sec, what, am I having a little grit? Like, but I'm also like, man, is his delivery and his, like, this just the professionalism of it. And he's like coaching college, he's done it all. And some of his clients, like the stuff he's done with D. Lillard, like, it's just incredible. So I've taken a lot of stuff from him. One, how to run a business, how to deliver it, but also set a tone for like the professional stuff, like the pre-draft stuff. So a lot of that's even more relevant to like pre-draft and college. Like, oh, you want to be, yeah, you just showed up 5 minutes before our workout. You have a foam rolled, you have whatever it is. Like,
yep.
And it's how you deliver those things of like, you really want to learn what it takes to be a pro. Like we talked about the consistency and the same thing. Yep. To your point, the consistency is not just on the basketball court. It's the 24 hours leading up. Sometimes that discipline prior to the workout. We used to joke, Holger, like all hydration, nutrition, everything happened. You should be able to go through a 2-hour workout without taking a sip of water. And you should have, like, you're not scarfing a protein bar in the middle of it. Real, bro, like, man, everything. He used to joke, like, during the game, if you got a break to have a water break during a time, that was a luxury. You should be able to go through that game. Like, that's how in tune you can get with your body.
Yeah.
And, like, when you're really serious about preparation and all that stuff, you think about that. Like, man.
That's crazy.
You know what I mean? Could you imagine me being in the middle of a workout, okay, like, I'm starving, man. I got to go. Give me a smoothie real quick. Like, you're just preparing yourself to go through this whole thing. Tim Martin.
That's look, four.
Yeah. Oh, right. I got four. Oh, yeah. I told you there was left.
No, Tim Martin's your fourth. Go ahead with Tim.
Yeah.
Go ahead with
Tim. Yeah, there's so many. Tyler Relf, one of my favorite. DJ Sackman, Remy down in Miami, Ronnie Tim. There's just so many.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, I've just been fortunate. I went through COVID. And I was getting inspired by, you know, that's when all this online training, right. My son did all these things. And I found so many different trainers and I reached out to a bunch and became friends with them. And it's been really cool to have that part. Same thing, like there's just so many amazing coaches and trainers. And because maybe they're not training as NBA superstar or have this note or made Swiss cultures or whatever it is, they're so good at what they do. And you take like, so even now I try to find one or two that I'll follow a week. And one, they're inspiring me, but it's been fun. There's a lot of good people out there. It's hard to name. You could, you know, but there's, like I said, everybody, if I were to have my son, like, and that's what I've been able to do, I would piece it off to, they can all do, you know what I mean? Certain things. And I've been blessed enough. And my son, like, you might ask him, he probably would train with Alex Bazell over me. Dang you, Alex.
That's beautiful.
But it's interesting to see back to the whole forward, like seeing Jaden evolve even now. Buying into the, like, now he's able to come work out with some of these pros. Like, we just had Jaden with Duncan Robinson, and it was really cool. Duncan told me after, he's like, Duncan, he was shooting. It's incredible. But he's like, some of the footwork and stuff, I was like actually watching Jaden do it before I did it.
It was really cool.
I never thought about it. Like, that's, and it's like, so you're, what's cool about footwork is you can always get better at it. But, like, for even Jaden to hear that or to see it, like, because there were times he was super bored. Like, they can be boring sometimes. Yeah. And that's why, at the end of the day, we didn't get into all the spinning. Like, to me, you master it, right? And then you can get super creative with it. I want to have complete, some of the spinning stuff, we look at it, it's to have complete control of my body. So when I'm coming off as basically a pin down or whatever I'm using, but how do I over-exaggerate? So once I've mastered this way, how do I make it even harder to really challenge my body? So that's why that was a lot of what Dirk and Holger did and Nash and all those guys. So I just took a spin on it. It's funny to hear, like, years later, Dirk would text me and be like, you know, seeing KD do some of his stuff, he's like, on a real athlete. He was like, it's always, you know.
Quick, I would say, I'm gonna get into my four. I gotta get you out of here. So you have your, Jaden has to go work out. And so my four, I'm gonna go quicker.
Yeah.
And it's people I know. More so than
the broad of it.
So, for me,
Chris
and because of his the system, like, we can literally, like you said, we could throw a middle school in there or a superstar athlete, the system, and we've just been able to progress people very quick in that system. Phil Handy for me, just the knowledge, the focus, and like you said, it's care. Like, it's genuine care every time get around him. Drew Hanlon. I know Drew, never, like, been in the gym with him. Yeah. We've just talked over social media and everything, but his ability to communicate moves and reads and all those, I've, like, stole my communication style from him.
He's arguably built one of the best platforms. Like, he just, if you're looking to, like, there's just nobody better that's built a platform.
His database
like that
is crazy.
He's ahead of a lot of guys like that. So I've always, from afar, respected how he did that. Yeah.
And then my fourth, man, it's a tie. It's between Tim Martin and Chris Hines, actually, who's with the Wolves, man. Tim, just because of, I just like his style.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. The way he simplifies a very difficult concept. Yeah. Not difficult for us, but difficult for other people. But Chris Hines, attention to detail.
Yep.
And once again, ability to just connect and to communicate and to stay humble in the process of he's developing. The NBA's probably next superstar helping with Anthony Edwards, right? And it's just like...
I've heard his name. I've never met him, but yeah, I've heard good things.
Oh, yeah. So he's from the same. So he comes from the Phil Handy, Chris Johnson. Yeah. You know, they... Chris coached him in high school, I believe.
Okay.
And he went on to play in Utah and overseas and all that. And but he... Man, he knows his stuff, so...
Yeah.
All great dudes, man.
Got Jordan Lawley down.
Oh, J-Law. No, so we...
One of the funniest platforms. I love,
like, absolutely. And that's
his
stuff.
Spirit for people, his family, and his yes. journey. There's just, yeah.
Where he's amazing. We're traveling down to go see J-Law. He's going to be our first offsite podcast, yes. probably, because he, yeah, his story is amazing. He's, yeah. I think he's like in Australia right now or something, but But no, there's a bunch of others. Only Simplest. There's a bunch, like, yeah. Love you all, but those are the four that, you know, yeah. for the impact of what we're talking about. Fix the net, a misconception about you or basketball that you want to make straight. Let us know what it is and how you want to fix it, and then make your bucket.
Okay. Well, we already talked, I mean, you kind of did the creative spinning balance one, so we don't need to answer that. We kind of answered that. But one thing I've always talked about is this thing of AAU basketball. So being a parent myself, and I will even take the journey with my next son a little different than Jaden just finished. AAU is a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
It's not the whole thing. And I think a lot of parents, we mean well. We will invest so much money in these programs and traveling. And it's twofold. I will tell you this, like, you want to make sure you have all pieces of the puzzle. So that's that individual skill development. And sometimes you will hire one of these amazing trainers we just talked about or somebody in the area. Or that is the old school way of them just getting out in the backyard or in the court themselves. So that time there, then that small group stuff. So are they playing 3-on-3? Same thing, is it in a park or is it organized in that stuff? So you're getting that stuff and then getting the play. And like I said, I think too often the easiest way is to say is I threw my kids in clubs. Now there are some amazing clubs that do exactly all three of those.
Right.
And they're awesome. There's a lot that don't, and I'm gonna be honest, like in that, and it's saddening to see because I'm a father of this stuff. So while you mean well, I really challenge parents and guardians out there to check that. Are you getting all the stages of development? The second thing is that we can run ourselves ragged as families, and this is for all sports, you know, club stuff, soccer, lacrosse, all of it. Mm-hmm. Like, and how much family time are you really getting? You know what I mean? So you can say, oh, we traveled, whatever, 7 out of the 8 weeks for all these AAU tournaments. If we didn't piece all these other things, I think you missed out on that boat too. But also, the strain and stuff it is on the family. I'm not telling people what to do, but we decided to make sure in our family that we had all these layers of things, and then our family could be a family and our kids could be a kid. And I just thought it was so important.
Yeah.
And I had to, because I'm obsessive compulsive, and I think that was another thing, just learning as I navigated, is like carving out that space. I wanted my kids to where, like, they have a free time, like, oh, now I want to, let's go work out again, Dad, or let's do this. Like, it just started naturally happening. And if it didn't, cool, we had already managed and prioritized everything. So that's kind of the biggest thing, is everybody thinks you have to play this to be recruited, to get seen, or to get to this level, to a ranking, or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's a small piece of it. And like I said, you want to use it for information and resources. And maybe you have a little success, it should drive you to have more. If you don't, maybe it's driving you to be like, I got to get better. But it's just making sure you have all these things. And I've just seen so many families spend so much money on it with all good reason. But you can then argue, I would challenge you, whatever resources you have, piecing them off of that. The weight room becomes a super important movement. Yeah. Forget about weight, movement.
Mm-hmm.
Learning how to move, the like mobility, all that stuff. Are you piecing in that piece? So you either have access to somebody that you can get it really cheap or free, or now online, it's amazing. That's what's so cool about these resources.
Right.
You can get into social media, you know, it's a blessing and a curse. Like. You know, but there, if you want the knowledge, it's out there and you can find it, or you are one connection away from reaching out and saying, hey, can you can you do this? So yeah. That's probably the biggest thing is that everybody thinks that you have to play AU basketball, and you're seeing it at such a young age. And it's cool. Like, I love seeing kids, but like, there's just that, the whole thing about skill development. You'll see some of these kids, they're the same for the longest time, or they get burned out, or they get run down, or families do. And that's my challenge to everything is just as your family, as you're doing it, that constant communication, and are we kind of moving it together? Do we all understand it? But do we have time to just be a family where it's not running to the next gym or this McDonald's? Or we all know, like, those straight, AAU is so expensive now. I get mortified when I gotta go pay $45 to watch a game for one of my kids, you know, these tournament fees. Crazy. And everything. It's unbelievable. They're incredible businesses, but like I said, just finding out that. And to me, I'm seeing it now as my son, you know, who knows where his journey goes, but to see the constant state of development and now where his body's catching up to everything, and just seeing where at peace, where he is with the whole process, and now driving himself to work and finding those little things. And we took, I'll give you an example for this. You know, we decided 1 month before the Scholastic Live period that we weren't going to travel anymore with the stuff. He was going to come and just work out for 4 weeks. And that involved pre-draft stuff in Orlando and in my gym. So he's with pros and college. Like, it was incredible. But the weights, sleeping, eating, nutrition. He went to the Scholastic Live period and played incredible. And like, and opened up a bunch of offers, per se. And he's a rising junior. And what I love about that too is this Scholastic Live periods are incredible. So now there's two live periods throughout the course of a calendar year where you're playing with your school team in front of, like, what better? There's a system, there's a style. It's been incredible. I actually hope, no offense, they phase all that other stuff out. And I think that's what people would love to do anyway.
Yeah.
But now, even as a parent, like, I know I have those two periods. I want to focus on those. Because you're playing with a group you already know. But like, so I just think, like, same thing we do in the NBA. You look at the when the bubble happened. The play was incredible, if everybody remembers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they literally walked 20 minutes and they were back in their room. They didn't have to take an overnight flight. They didn't travel.
Right.
You think about it, like, just there were so many 50-point games, all that stuff. Well, it's kind of like that, but we can get running so ragged that we eat Chick-fil-A for the 10th time. We're sleeping in a different hotel, you know. And I'll give an example of it, to be brutally honest with people. I went and watched Jaden play in the EYBL in Atlanta. It was a four-day event. And they're New York Rams is a good program, but they weren't very good. You know, at that time, but you know, he played 13 minutes, 11, 8, whatever, 4. But in that 4 days, there were no lifts, there was no extra work.
Right.
And I wasn't upset with it. I was only upset with me because I should have done a little better research. I would have planned that stuff out. So the experience is still the experience.
Yeah.
Jay, get better, get tougher, whatever. Your team need to figure that out. But how would we have maximized? That's 4 important days of my son going into his junior year summer.
Yes.
And that's the mentality. Like, at the NBA, we would have got fired. Like, you just wait for your development. Like,
yes.
Nick Claxton didn't get developed for 4 days, or what were we doing? You know, so I, not that I wanted to be that serious, but that's the kind of approach, like, you know, and even Jaden just understanding what it should have been. We could have worked out at the Fairfield Inn and Suites weight room. We just create a different workout, or we would have gone to any college and got some extra work in. So I think it's that mentality, and I think so often we can get run and ragged where you lose those moments. So that was long for, like, and I challenge a lot of good friends, a lot of program directors, like, why can't it be better? So even if I knew that, like, if I had a program of 10 kids and what, maybe 6 are just gonna play, the other 4 EYBL or whatever it is aren't gonna, how do I create their development? So the same thing we do in the NBA. There's guys that are low minute guys out of the rotation. Our whole job is to have them ready. So if somebody went down and they needed to play 30 minutes, they would. That's the difference of winning that game, seeding in the playoffs or whatever. But also, to me, I looked at it, yes, from an organizational thing, where I tried to, my spirit was always like, if, let's just say that was Cam Thomas in Brooklyn, like, that's Cam Thomas changing his career. Being ready for that moment. And that was on us. Conditioning, 3-on-3, style, like, plays, everything.
Yeah.
Fresh. So when you popped in 15 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever, boom. That's the difference of a long contract. That's you actually getting into the rotation, or, and you finally chasing your dream, like, of doing that. So that's, like, is always trying to find those moments. There's rest involved in that for sure, but it's how do you prepare, you know? And I think, you know, college programs and younger, like, can start to have more of that mentality.
Yeah.
You know, like, are we really, you know?
It's gonna take boldness from one person to do it and to prove it, and then for other people to follow. And
people always used to call it extra work for these guys. Like, we called it the stay ready. Extra work, KD plays 40 minutes a game. If he did something the next day or the, that's extra.
Right, right.
We wanna get you to equate a 40 minutes of play time so you could be ready to replace Kevin.
Yeah.
If we tat him off night or whatever happened.
Yeah.
So that's the difference, like, staying ready for that moment. And everybody's moments are different. So we really, even that mindset of, like, people, you know, in the NBA, oh, you did extra work. you didn't play a minute last night. This is to get, but it was just changing that stuff. Then on top of it, what would be extra? Yeah. And just setting yourselves up for success when you get the opportunity.
Yeah, I fixed that. Yeah. Still can dunk. Yeah. He can still dunk, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Last segment here. Two questions for me. Do you have to? Well.
Yeah. No. Let's get it.
It's 11:05, so let me know. All right. Two questions for me. It could be about anything in the world.
Give me one thing on your life bucket list right now that you haven't accomplished that you want to. And it can be traveling to this place or doing this business or establishing this relationship, whatever it is.
I want... there's a couple.
Good, I like them.
The most pressing. The most pressing one for me right now is I want to really move into the space of like a basketball consultant, but in a way of being like a peak performance coach within that space, and I can any offer over any part of basketball. So you as a trainer, I already have ideas for you.
Yeah.
How can I maximize what you do, but also keep the time with your family, but you can make more money and impact more people? Take an NBA team. What can I do to help you figure out what needs to work for you to become better as a player, NBA player? Hey, let's fix your nutrition. Let's get you out of this relationship. Like whatever area you need a solution in, I can provide a solution. That's kind of just how my mind works. It's what I've always done my whole life to people who have an impact on a lot of people. Like I want to encourage the encouragers. Like you have your, you know, we'll just take your Instagram following, right? 100,000 people plus that you can impact on a daily basis. How do we make you more impactful?
Yeah.
Even though you're doing an amazing job, right?
Yeah.
But hey, why not do more? So I'm moving into that space. So that I want that to, it's on the bucket list to be known as that.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm so glad I asked that question because one, I'm looking for somebody like that. So you might just got hired. And then second, like there's so everyone looking for that position now. They're investing in that and seeing that, which is amazing. And I have a few people I want to connect you with that's what they do. And it was really cool. All right.
Good question.
Second question. You're on death row. You get your last meal. You can order anything you want, any drink, whatever. There's no limits to the courses. There's no, it could be, I want this burger from here. I want my grandma's this. What do you, I'll give you an example. So mine.
Give this, what do you want?
I want a bowl of New England clam chowder the size of this blackboard with a big old pepper shaker, a box of oyster crackers, and two of my wife's homemade grilled bacon cheeses. And that's it. And maybe a nice glass of Calodoro Extra Nail with a big rock. And I'm out. That's it.
Oh, man. So on death row, because you made it death row, it made me go one total way, right? And I'm like...
Your last meal.
Go last meal. Because, I'm going to say, if it was death row, I would take communion.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and like, Jesus, I want to make sure I'm good with you.
Yeah.
I don't care about what I'm eating. I'm going to heaven. Karina's over here rolling.
Yeah.
If it's my last meal, I'm getting shrimp enchiladas from Javier's, specifically at the Aria from Las Vegas. They just taste better with the rice and beans on the side. I am getting my mom's chicken enchiladas that I grew up with.
Okay.
I like Mexican food.
Yeah.
And I am getting a hamburger from a place called Madero's Burgers in Brazil. The best hamburger in the world. Hands down.
Execute you early. You're gonna cost them so much money.
Listen, I'm hungry, man. You know, it was a home cooked meal for my mom, so that was a little cheap.
No.
And then for the drink, kids, I don't drink alcohol, but I would have a French Connection on the rocks. Specifically from this resort in Costa Rica I went to. It was really, really good. If I were to drink, but I don't. Great question, man.
That's good, yeah.
All right.
Thank you so much, man.
24 second shot clock. Let the people know where they can find you and a message for the people. That's your camera right there.
Yeah, 24 seconds. You can find me on social. I'm really active on Instagram, @AdamPHarrington. Also follow my sister's foundation at JHH Memorial Fund, at New Jersey _clubhouse, as well as the gym we built in New Jersey. But I just encourage you to make a difference, and you never know how that can be. Being grateful, thankful, smiling at people. But thanks for tuning in, and please check us out.
Sweet, man. Thanks for coming on the show, brother.
Yeah, thank you, man. Yeah. I really appreciate you reaching out.
Absolutely. That's all we have for you today, folks. See you next time. Peace.